Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. I'm very honored and happy that joining us is Dr. George Eastman. Dr. Eastman received a doctorate from Harvard in philosophy and also a doctorate in clinical psychology from New York University. He has a private practice as a psychologist in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you very much, Dr. Eastman, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
I am anxious to hear how you became vegan 45 years ago and are still vegan 45 years later.
I think the impetus was the work that I was doing in philosophy at that time. This would be in my late 30s and early 40s. And Buddhism very much stresses the element of compassion and loving kindness. Buddhism promotes the idea that all living creatures, without exception, have an equal right to live, have an equal right to life. And that struck me in a very deep way, and over the course of probably between 2 and 3 years, I began to alter my diet, began to do a lot more reading, and came to the realization that it didn't make any sense to be killing, raising and killing animals, depriving them of their life, and in that process, depriving them of life in a very gruesome and horrible way.
I am happy to have seen you at many tabling events doing vegan activism. And what inspires you to generously donate your time for vegan activism?
Well, I would say the first 10 years or so of my being a vegan, I was very involved with raising a family, 2 young children, and also moving out of the field of philosophy into psychology. So I didn't really have a lot of time other than to tend to my family and to study. So I would be what I guess I would call a closet vegan. Didn't put energy into trying to inform other people. But over time, it became more and more important for me for people to at least consider the point of view that I had arrived at. I never have taken a sort of missionary point of view. I've never taken an aggressive point of view that people should do what I do or believe what I believe. But I've eventually adopted the point of view that I wanted others to at least have the same information that I have so that they could then be informed and have a choice. Because most Americans just eat unconsciously according to what our culture says is normal. And I would mention a book, which I think everyone might benefit from reading, by an author called Melanie Joy, J-O-Y. That book is called Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. And what she explains in that book is that our culture is dominated by a certain kind of ideology regarding food, which she has given a name to, and she calls it carnism. Carnism is a belief that killing and eating animals is normal, natural, and necessary. Now, if you really start looking into the whole question of what kind of diet is really appropriate for human beings, you would discover that our digestive system is different from carnivores' digestive system. Our dentures, our teeth are different. The makeup of the digestive enzymes are different. So there are lots of differences, and humans can survive very, very well, and there are a number of athletes who are vegan, and they perform very well. And, you know, it's also important to remember that the largest animals, and the animals that we choose to eat are vegans. Take an elephant, for example, or a large steer or cow. And these animals do very well with just eating plants, and humans can do the same. In fact, to some extent, the idea of being a vegan, which is something I'd like to talk more about if you're interested, that idea is supplemented by another term, which is plant-based diet. So one can consume a plant-based diet but not necessarily be a vegan, because veganism is, in fact, an ism. It's a way of life. It involves not wearing leather of any kind, certainly not wearing fur, and not wearing wool as well. In other words, veganism involves a way of living your life that doesn't involve the injuring or death of any living creature. That's really what veganism is. There are people who get into veganism just for health reasons, and they do benefit tremendously just from a plant-based diet, which is free of cholesterol and free of saturated fats, all of which build up plaque in the arteries.
And since veganism is basically practicing harmlessness, it is extending compassion to all without discrimination, without exclusion.
Right.
Why is it so resisted and rejected in the mainstream culture?
Human beings, we, you, I, we don't like to see ourselves as excluded from the majority. We like to see ourselves fitting in. It helps to make us feel more secure. It's probably some very primitive kind of feeling of safety that comes with fitting in and doing what everybody else does. And history shows that it's a bit of a lemming-type complex, that people will do what everybody else does, even if it is, in fact, very destructive and not to their advantage to do it. Then there is the economic dimension, where there's a hell of a lot of money that's connected with the dairy and meat industries, and they have very powerful lobbies in Washington, and our laws, you and I, through our tax money, are paying enormous subsidies to keep the meat industry and the dairy industry going. So there are lobbies involved. There are politicians who want to defend these types of corporate interests within their communities or their states. So there's that economic factor. And then there's also, let's call it a gustatory factor, that you eat one diet and you become accustomed to it. And that's what you crave, because it's familiar and it's satisfying. It tastes good, so you want to continue to eat that way. And if people suggest to you, maybe you need to change that, you're offended and you're even frightened that somebody's going to take something away from you that brings you pleasure. So I'm just giving you some of the reasons. But I would add one more. That drive towards violence and the gratification that comes from violence, I think, also feeds in to sustaining a type of diet that involves violence.
Dr. Eastman, I'd like to explore that further, especially from the philosophy of Dr. Will Tuttle, the author of The World Peace Diet.
I'm familiar with his work and have talked with Will a number of times.
I've heard him say many times in his lectures that it is humanity's practice of these food rituals, which are indoctrinated from generation to generation, where we not only the practice of attacking, enslaving, oppressing, confining, torturing, exploiting animals, but also the fact that we're ingesting these substances continues the cycle of violence. And this being the 14th anniversary of 9/11, I would like to discuss a little bit about that, the premise that a diet based on carnism perpetuates violence in human societies, where the philosophy is that as the culture transitions into a vegan lifestyle, that there is the great possibility that the global community will be much less violent.
I think that's probably a true statement, because the SAD diet, the standard American diet, is without any question, if anyone is willing to explore it, the product of enormous violence. Violence to the environment, violence to the animals, violence to the workers. The highest rate of injury of any employment are the workers in the factories that are killing animals and preparing meat for our table. So there's violence no matter how you cut it. Violence at birth, the calves being pulled away from the mother while the mother's bleeding, possibly for hours, for her lost child. The male chickens just being ground up right away, because they're not, except for a few that are reared to be overfed quickly and sold. The whole process is a violent one. And it's not really surprising that the type of diet that is preferred is a diet that itself grows out of violence. And what comes out of violence is likely to promote violence and lead to more. You know, Albert Schweitzer, the famous Swiss doctor who set up very early on a medical base in Africa and spent years there trying to help very poor Africans to maintain some level of health. He made the statement that not until mankind stops killing animals will they stop killing one another. And I think that that captures some real truth.
It's time to take a break. We are joined by Dr. George Eastman, a clinical psychologist in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Dr. Eastman has been sharing information about his experience at being vegan for 45 years and his work as a professor of philosophy for 14 years, as well as teaching for 24 years at the Berklee College of Music in the Music Therapy Program. After the break, Dr. Eastman will be sharing more information about the intersectionality of food rituals in cultures in relationship to crises and international violence, and how we can help to resolve social problems through a transition to a vegan lifestyle.
Hi, this is Cliff Goodwin, and you're listening to WCUW Worcester 91.3 FM, community radio serving central Massachusetts. Online at WCUW.org.
The Middle Eastern Oud, the Indian Shanai, Tibetan Chants, Tuvan Throat Singers, Balinese Gamelan, African High Life, Music of the Whole Earth, every Saturday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. on WCUW, your community radio station, bringing you sounds of the world on Music of the Whole Earth.
Welcome back from the break. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. We are joined by Dr. George Eastman, a clinical psychologist in Cambridge, Mass. And before the break, Dr. Eastman was giving information about his experience at being vegan for 45 years, and we'll continue our conversation on the intersectionality of carnism with social justice problems and the transformation into a global culture of veganism to help uplift humanity. Dr. Eastman, I would love to hear about the experience of tabling and the experience of the pay-per-view, when the public has an opportunity to see the truth of what it takes to get the products of animal exploitation on our plates.
Probably most of your listeners wouldn't know, unless they had participated in it, what pay-per-view is. What it actually is that you are given a dollar. You actually are given a dollar if you will sit down and look at either one or two very short videos. The videos aren't any longer than maybe 5 or 7 minutes. usually we have two computers that are contained within a box that shelters them, so you can look into the box and see the screen where you actually see how the cows, for example, are stunned and then basically immediately hung up by their legs as they're still dangling and wiggling and struggling, and then their throats are cut. I don't want to go into all of the details here. It would be very disturbing. It's very disturbing to see it, and the animal is bled to death. Usually before the animal is fully dead, the skin is ripped off, and the dismemberment process begins. The chickens, their beaks are cut off because when they're put in cages and they are forced to be in very close contact, they may peck one another to the point where they injure one another, and there's a lot of disease. So the cruelty of the treatment is beyond belief. There's usually some footage on that, and then there may be a shorter video at the same time just on the environmental impact of animal agriculture and the way in which it's a major contributor to global warming. We typically get, in any, let's say, five-hour period, we get as many as 40 to 80 people who are willing to do this. I see the pay-per-view as a very powerful way of informing people. You know, we're not talking about brainwashing. We're not talking about manipulating people. We're just talking about exposing people to the realities of how that meat or that chicken or that animal product got to the store and onto their plate, which, as I mentioned in the first part of the interview, most people never consider. They don't think about it. And as a matter of fact, they don't really connect a piece of beef with a living animal. And it's really only when you begin to make a connection between the food that's on your plate with actual living creatures that also have feelings and have a life of their own and have desires and pleasures. It's only when you begin to make that kind of connection that you can begin to think about options. Well, gee, do I really want to continue to eat like this, or is there some other way to eat? The purpose of the tabling is to help people to see that there are alternatives to the way that they have been eating.
Dr. Eastman, why is it that in the U.S. educational system, why is it that this information is still kept out of the schools, yet what I see is there'll be syllabi that includes information about insects and butterflies, soil, but when it comes to the carnivorous diet, it's still hidden.
There are economic interests here which influence the political system at the highest level, the federal level, all the way down to school districts. So all of those reasons apply here, plus some others that are more pertinent, I think, to schools. Part of my own history is that I did teach high school, actually, for 2 years very early. A big issue with schools is the relationship of parents to the school administration and to the teachers. In almost all cases, the parents eat animals, and eat animals in the way that I've described, in an unconscious way, in an unquestioning way. And for the school to begin to raise questions about the diet of the home and the parents is seen as threatening by the parent. I think there's likely to be a negative blowback to that, that ultimately if there's a parent organization, the topic will come up, well, you know, the principal is saying that we should reconsider eating animals. Oh, and pretty soon there will be pressure, maybe against the school board, and that principal will no longer be the principal of that school. So there's the question of threat. People think that, particularly because of carnism, that ideology, they want the public schools, particularly, and this really includes most of the charter schools, they want these schools to reflect the values that they automatically think are the right values. So it's very hard for public schools to become the leaders in social change. Very, very, very hard. There was a guy who wrote about this problem. His name was George Counts, C-O-U-N-T-S, who was writing in the late 30s and towards the start of the Second World War. He wrote one book called Dare the Schools Start a New Social Order. And John Dewey was involved in that whole movement. But the answer to that question is that, well, only at their peril. So to introduce such a fundamental shift as movement towards the type of compassionate thinking, that's very, very, very difficult thing to do.
I would also like to discuss the philosophy of the boomerang effect, and as Will Tuttle puts it, as we sow, so shall we reap. I understand that there are quite a number of people who are involved in the 9/11 truth that still contains violence, and that also contains betrayal, and it contains propaganda. And I see that as the boomerang effect, because when we take the animals who have been raised, what's called humanely raised farmed animals, which of course is the ultimate betrayal, those who follow the 9/11 truth express that we've been betrayed. So there's the boomerang effect of betrayal and propaganda, and especially propaganda when I think of the dairy ads, which of course they leave out the truth that in order to confiscate and commodify the bovine mother's breast milk, all the calves of the dairy cows are abducted and murdered, the males immediately, the females when they no longer lactate, and then every dairy cow, once she no longer lactates, then she's in the slaughter line becoming hamburger. What are your thoughts on that?
People either don't pay any attention, although in most cases they tend to want to accept as real what is totally unreal and a misrepresentation of reality. So ads are lies. So this is a violent culture, and it's also expressed, of course, in our diet. So in a sense, the destruction of the Twin Towers and the tragic death of 3,000 or so people in that process, this was an exceedingly violent act, but an act consistent with many of the deepest layers of values that guides the society. So what we're talking about when we're talking about veganism is we're talking about changing fundamentally from a culture of violence to a culture of compassion and peacefulness. The average American doesn't know about, doesn't realize the extent of the violence that's contained within the food that they're eating. So that's why I table, that's why I take opportunities to talk with people to try to increase their awareness of the violence. And without that first step of awareness, there's not going to be any change. So, and I see your program as another attempt to try to inform people. That's the first step.
Thank you, Dr. Eastman. And do you have any contacts for our listeners?
I am a member of the Vegan Metro West Meetup Group.
Thank you very much, Dr. Eastman, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Well, thanks very much for giving me this opportunity to share. I very, very much appreciate it.
We've been joined by Dr. George Eastman, a clinical psychologist. Dr. Eastman has been sharing information about veganism to develop a more compassionate diet and a more compassionate lifestyle, which in turn will create a more compassionate, peaceful world. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Let's go out with Your Sacred Heart by Vegan Smythe.
Does the angel on your shoulder tell you to kill or to be kind? Are your prayers for peace on a Sunday and your weekly groceries lined? If the Lord is my shepherd, I trust he won't shepherd me through the slaughterhouse gate. Every creature on earth is a miracle birth, not ours to desecrate. He's a lamb of God, not a lamb chop. She's a sacred cow, not a burger in a butcher shop. They're mother hens, not a bargain bag of drumsticks and breasts. Look in their eyes and your sacred heart will show you the rest. Your sacred heart, your sacred heart. If thy shall be done here on earth as in heaven, shouldn't we be just? Or does our dominion mean force our opinion and make them the flesh of our lust? My body's a temple, so I won't defile it with offerings burned in the fat. The bottom line still is thou shalt not kill. It's ill to argue with that. He's a lamb of God, not a lamb chop. She's a sacred cow, not a burger in a butcher shop. Their mother hens, not a bargain bag of drumsticks and breasts. Look in their eyes and your sacred heart will show you the rest. Your sacred heart, your sacred heart. If he was here incarnate, what would be his action? For the way, the truth, and the life is the way of compassion. We have every herb on the earth and every fruit-yielding seed. With this glorious manger, a famine's no danger. Our mercy can serve every creature that they shall be freed. Your sacred heart, your sacred. Lamb of God, not a lamb chop. And she's a sacred cow, not a burger in a butcher shop. Their mother hens, not a bargain bag of drumsticks and breasts. Look in their eyes and your sacred heart will show you the rest. Your sacred heart, your sacred heart.
Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.